What happens when a teenage boy develops scales and fins on his 13th birthday? What's up with movies about teenagers spontaneously turning into merfolk? What kind of connections can we make between the Disney Mermaid universe and Dave Coulier? All this and more on a brand new Mermaid Movie Club. I'm Mermaid's Andrea. Let's dive in with the 13th year. Greetings and shalutations, merpeeps. Good to see y'all again. I mean, about as much as I can see from a podcast. You know what I mean. You know where I'm going with this. We have a brand new Mermaid Movie Club selection to dive into, and oh my gosh, it's one that I've been excited from the get-go. I've been really, really wanting to get into this film as it was a big part of my young life. I grew up with this movie, and I love it to this day. This episode, as you may have figured out, is all about the 13th year. Now, this has always been a favorite DCOM for me for obvious reasons, along with Luck of the Irish, Halloween Town, Cadet Kelly, and like every Descendants movie except for the first one. I don't know why. I think that one just slows down significantly in the middle for me. But anyway, this is actually a pretty early DCOM. Fun fact. It's the 7th overall. So right now, it's 2020. There are about 108 DCOMs. So this was back in the days when like Disney Channel, they would churn out several DCOMs a year. Like, let's see. There were like 8 to 10 DCOMs coming out per year. So this was like, I would go so far as to call it like Golden Age Disney Channel, but that was around the time I grew up, so maybe I'm biased. I don't know. This came out in 1999, and it was the third of 8 DCOMs to come out that year. 8 came out in 1999. I think that was the same year Xenon came out, the first Xenon movie. I think the most to come out in one year was like 12, and that was in 2000. And since then, they've kind of dwindled. They're producing less and less each year now. I think last year we had like 2, and then there were a few more. Like there was like last year, I think there was another 2 or something. I don't know. I guess they just decided to do in theaters what they used to do with Disney Channel movies and just churn out a absolute crap ton of them per year. So what I'm saying is, I'm old and Disney Channel dynamics used to be so different. Get off my lawn. So anyway, back to stats. Sorry. Kind of went off on a little tangent there. Actually, no, I'm not sorry. The 13th year. 13th year premiered on Disney Channel on May 15th, 1999. It is directed by Dwayne Dunham and stars Chez Starbuck, Courtney Draper, Justin John Ross, Lisa Stahl Sullivan, and Uncle Joey. I mean, Dave Coulier. Sorry, Dave Coulier. Fun fact, Dave Coulier contributed a voice to 3 episodes of the Little Mermaid animated series as Moray the Eel. You know, the snaky little con artist eel? That one? Yeah, that's him. I didn't know that until I started researching this episode and just stumbled upon that one in his filmography. You know, you learn something new every day. It's crazy. And that's been the fun thing about doing this show is that, like, I've been learning all these little things about these movies that I've been covering. And I know this is only, like, the second one in, but I'm just looking forward to going into even more of these movies and learning more and being able to make more connections to other movies and other things. And this is already a lot of fun. So anyway, before I get right into this movie, I've watched this a few times now, like I said, but I'm revisiting for the sake of the podcast. I'm going to recommend a video really quick and I'm going to drop it in the show notes. I hope I remember to do this. There is a video on Christy Carlson Romano's cooking show about this movie, not about the movie, but where she's talking to Chez Starbuck and she and him are making clam chowder, and she asks him a lot of questions and he has some interesting set stories about like how stuff was made, how he got cast. He mentioned that the movie had like a $5 million budget and I think it went over, and it was one of the most expensive DCOMs of the time. I don't know if that's changed since, but it's a really, really good watch and really informative. So go ahead and watch that. Christy Carlson Romano kitchen throwback with Chez Starbuck. There was also one with, Sarah Paxton, which I did not mention in the Aquamarine episode. So check that out as well if you want. I'm also going to link in the show notes a great interview with Chez on MTV.com from, I think, 2016, where he drops a lot more 13th year trivia, like how Dave Coulier was something of a coach to him on set and how he maintained a friendship with Kristen Stewart. And I'll get into Kristen Stewart later. If you've seen this, you know what I'm talking about. But if you haven't, prepare to be amazed. So let me give you like the Cliff's Notes of this movie. If you haven't seen this, if you have seen this, then you know what it's about, obviously. But if you don't, The best way I can describe it is 13-year-old boy goes through puberty in the absolute worst way. Now, hang on, there's a line here. sorry. Now, the IMDb summary this gave was really, really vague. It was like, oh, this kid finds out who his real parents are. That really wasn't the whole gist of the movie, and you're going to find that out pretty quickly when you're watching. If you are watching this, I'll drop it later on in the episode where you can watch it. But I'll just say I watched on Disney Plus. There's a lot of emphasis in the IMDb summary on like he found his parents or whatever. But really, that's like maybe a third of the conflict of this movie. I'm just gonna go ahead and put that out there. This isn't Star Wars. We're not trying to figure out who Rey's parents are. This is the 13th year. And with that said, this is the 13th year. I'm gonna change the format up a little bit, like I did differently than what I did with Aquamarine. I'm gonna kind of go down the line of the main plot. I kind of rushed Aquamarine. I'm gonna go ahead and admit that. I had some stuff happen like right after it. Important life stuff, and it got a little crazy. But this will go a little bit better. I'm confident in that because I'm taking my time. I'm learning to take my time, my guys. So here we go. This is the 13th year. Let us dive in. This is where I'd put a splash effect if I had one. Sploosh. Okay, there we go. So we can begin in, I don't actually know where this movie is. It's in the coastal town of Mahone Bay, which Google tells me is in Nova Scotia. The movie itself was filmed throughout Newport Beach, California, so go figure. There's this gorgeous mermaid swimming around with a very human-looking baby. There's some mermaid biology stuff that's covered later on that will explain all of this, kind of. All the while, there's this guy on a fishing boat, and I swear to Neptune, I looked at him, and I swear I thought he was wearing one of those red MAGA hats, and it caught me off guard, and I felt like a chill run down my spine, not gonna lie. I didn't quite catch what it actually says. It looks like something, something fishing, but from where I was watching it, it looked like a MAGA hat, and I was just like, ugh. This red-hatted fisherman is known as Big John Wheatley, but he's played by the same guy who played JJ the diner owner from Parks and Recreation, Brent Briscoe. So if I end up calling him JJ occasionally, don't be surprised, because Parks and Rec is one of my favorite shows ever. So Big John spots a fluke flipping far off in the distance, and he thinks he's got himself a big fish and starts chasing this mermaid down, tracking her with a sonar fish finder. Now, I'm no fishing expert, so I had to Google this. Sonar fish finders are indeed a thing. Garmin makes them. A couple other companies make them, but Garmin was the one that I recognized. However, they don't look like this. And I don't think they work like this. This looks more like a radar. I don't think they work like this. Because you would think a fish finder would track every fish around him, but instead it's literally just this one. Just this mermaid. And there's something to be said here about there's a million fish in the sea, but geez, a mermaid. I should have like a mermaid drinking game for like whenever somebody uses like some cliche from some Etsy t-shirt or whatever. Just take a drink or whatever equivalent is. No offense if you do. I'm just saying it's one of those little cliche things. I made that was really loud, by the way. I'm so sorry. So let's talk about this mermaid, by the way. She does not have a name. She does not speak. But she looks like Mariah Carey to me. I saw another review claim that she looked a little bit like Sheryl Crow, which, I mean, yeah, sure, a little bit. I see it. But I see, like, 90s Mariah Carey. Like, maybe Daydream era, maybe Charm Bracelet era, maybe music, not, I don't know about Music Box era, but it's somewhere in the 90s. I'm using Daydream as my benchmark because that was actually the first album I owned, Fun Xandria Effect. So Mariah, I might be referring to her as Mariah or Mermama Carey from here on out, just cause she doesn't have a name. And Mariah is trying to escape the MAGA hat guy. And in the process, she places her baby in a basket on another boat. And at first I thought she was going to like essentially get harpooned or kidnapped by this dude. And so she just put him somewhere where he would be safe, but no, she distracts him. As any good mermaid would. He reacts by waving to the mermaid and he's calling out, "Hey, it's a mermaid! I found a mermaid! Hey, hey, you're beautiful!" And it's all hunky-dory for a while, and that's all cute. Until the boat crashes into a lighthouse, and it's funny because we cut back to Mariah, and she's just like, she rolls her eyes, she's like, "Humans are so stupid." And she swims away. That's chaotic energy right there. I stan. We stan. So, and here was the funny thing I found about that. Now, encountering a mermaid back then was just so much more simple. Because back then, you could wave at your mermaid and say hi. In 2010, you could take a picture of your mermaid on your smartphone, maybe even take a selfie with her, and post it on your Facebook page. Now, in 2020, you can take an entire video of a mermaid on your smartphone and make an entire 20-minute long YouTube video about how she's a hoax. Simpler times then. Just simpler times. So, now we meet a rather lovely couple on another boat. This is Whit and Sharon Griffin, played by Dave Coulier and Lisa Stahl Sullivan, respectively. And they're all lovey-dovey on their little boat, talking about the future. They want to turn this boat into their own little small business, like a little tour boat thing. So, of course, Sharon insists it's to escape the trappings of capitalism. So, needless to say, we stand and I'm to capitalist legend. And then there's a sweet coupley moment, but it's ruined because they're hearing a baby crying. So they go back to the back of the boat and they find that it's a whole baby. That is a whole baby. This is the baby, obviously, that Mermama Carrie left as she was distracting Big John. Surprise, surprise. We all knew. And they just kind of take it. Like, right there. Whole baby. And poor Mermama, she's looking on like, I know she wants to say, that's my baby. That's my baby. And she's just watching them. There's this long shot of her just looking on as these two humans are walking off with her baby, and she's like totally helpless. And this is a really good shot because like it really, she, the scene just kind of breathes here. You just kind of watch her cry, and kind of like the ending scene in Call Me by Your Name. I know these movies are total apples and oranges. The end of Call Me by Your Name, after Elio gets the phone call and then he's like crying during the end credits. That's what that reminded me of for some reason. For like I don't know. It's not quite the same, but it's also kind of the same. So again, I have to reiterate that she doesn't say a word throughout this movie. And even if she did, there's a risk of revealing herself. And you know what happens once someone finds a mermaid in a movie? I mean, obviously they ask the mermaid out to lunch. Or is that just me? Probably me. All right, let's move on to 13 years later. That was my impression of a SpongeBob title card because I do not have the audio for a SpongeBob title card. And I'm not about to use audio for a SpongeBob title card because I'm not about to get busted by Nickelodeon. And I'm also not using audio from this movie because I don't want to get busted by Disney. I have to cover a lot of Disney stuff on this show, and I'm really trying to stay in their good graces for now. So anyway, 13 years later, from the time we met the baby to now. So Cody is effectively 13 years old. Cody is the baby, FYI. They didn't clarify that. Cody is the baby. Yeah, Cody. I looked at the name, the origin of the name Cody, and I think it's of Irish origin for helpful. And oddly enough, he is on the boat, helping with stuff on the boat. So maybe that's the connection to be made to the name. Looks like the boat's stalled here, and Uncle Joey's desperately trying to get it going, but it's not fast enough for some Karen, and I'm sorry in advance if your name is Karen, because I know this isn't you. She's getting all up in Cody's business because the boat isn't going fast enough, or hasn't even started yet, I should say. And she's like, for $5, I expected so much more. $5. Okay. $5 is not a lot of money. What did $5 buy you in 1999? A Big Mac meal, maybe? Adjusted for inflation, assuming this is indeed in Nova Scotia. Canadian mermaids, please correct me if I'm wrong. Or economists, whatever. I'm bad at math and I used something I found on Google. According to the thing I found on Google, $5 Canadian in 1999 is equivalent to $7.36 in 2020. That's a pretty significant margin. $5 for a boat tour is not bad. A $7 to $8 boat tour seems like a pretty dang good deal in my book. And I live kind of beachish area, so those are pretty common. You know, you get what you pay for. It's not worth harassing a teenager who's trying his best. I cannot reiterate enough. I can't stress that enough, you guys. Just, it's out of his control. Let him live. Let the kid live. So then there's a swim meet, and I'm going to go ahead and point this out. He's on a swim team. He's a very, very popular person in school. He's like the star of the swim team. And he's going, there's a swim meet. He's already late to it. Does that sound familiar? Something another Disney mermaid we know? So he's late to something. And so he's trying to catch a boat to the meet. And then he ultimately misses it. And the guy on the boat says, you gotta catch the next one. But Cody is not the type to wait. No, no. He ducks under the barricade, dives into the ocean, swims across, and hops back onto the next dock and books it for the swim meet. He swims fully clothed, I might add. You're not going to do that in 2020 because you probably got your phone in your pocket. That said, Cody would probably still do it. He seems the type. Now, I said he was very similar to another Disney mermaid who we all know and being late to this thing, but unlike that mermaid, he actually showed up. Showed up late, but still showed up. Ariel could never. As expected, Cody slays it. The Marlins slay it. What team? Marlins. And they make it to the next round. But then there's this poor, poor sousaphonist. I think that's a sousaphone. I didn't play sousaphone. I guess he loses his balance and falls into the pool. Sousaphone first. And Cody has to go in and save him. This is Jess, who we're about to get to know very well as this film goes on. As we leave the scene, we're left with like this parting shot of Jess's sousaphone laying in the pool, taking one last gasp that bubbles upward with like this tuba sound. And I don't think that's something that would happen with an actual sousaphone. I don't think that's physically possible, but you can't apply logic to a movie about merfolk. But I swear when that shot came up, I laughed harder than I did at anything else in that movie. But I think that's just what my sense of humor has come to lately. It was just the whole presentation of it is hilarious. So, like I said, Cody's very popular. We're going to check out Cody's school life right now, get a little bit of background on Cody. He's the most popular boy in school, which this passerby student makes very clear to Cody's pre-established girlfriend, Sam. She goes to such great lengths to tell Sam how lucky she is that she's dating the most popular boy in school. It's so overwrought. It's typical DCOM acting here. You know, I have to point this out. Cody, he's not like an Ethan Kraft from Lizzie McGuire type of popular boy. Like for me, Ethan Kraft is like ultimate popular teen boy archetype, and he's super friendly with everyone, kind of goofy, well-intentioned, dumb as a box of rocks, ultimately non-judgmental. At least after season one. Season one, Ethan is kind of, post-season one, Ethan is, dare I say, a cinnamon roll. Cody's kind of a jerk. At least to this teacher of his. Like, this kid would have caught his attention so fast if he'd backtalked me, if I were that teacher. Like, kid, I'm not dealing with that. So then there's this marine bio project, and they're all assigned random partners, naturally. And Cody gets assigned with Jess. He hasn't realized who Jess is at first, because he just reads the name. He's like, who's this guy? I've never heard his name before. Who is this? But then when he finds out that he was the kid that he saved in the pool, he's like, oh. And so then that makes Cody kind of a laughingstock because now he has to deal with doing a project with this very unpopular kid. So he doesn't love this pairing. He just really does not love being paired up with this kid. Okay, sure. But when my partner didn't want to get paired up with me in a science project, he started an awful rumor about me that spread throughout the school and turned half my classmates against me. That happened. Won't get too much into it. Let me talk about Jess for a little bit. I think Jess deserves a little bit of recognition here. Jess is easily the funniest character in this movie, in the way that he's kind of meta. I get a dorky but kind of quippy Peter Parker vibe from him. Now, which Peter Parker am I talking about? Well, that's up to you. But the other thing about Jess is that he's just so genuinely good. He comes to Cody's birthday party and brings a gift. Even if he's only just met Cody, he doesn't really feel like they're friends, but he comes with a gift, a copy of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, only to be intimidated and leave promptly after. And for reasons that will be revealed later, Jess really proves himself to be the MVP. He's just a really good friend to have. Honestly, where we're at in the movie right now, Cody doesn't deserve him. I'm just going to say it. So that is my brief love letter to Jess Wheatley. Oh yeah, that's right. He's the son of Big John Wheatley / Mega Hat Fisherman / JJ from Parks and Rec. So he's got that to deal with this weird mermaid obsessed dad, on top of being the laughingstock of the entire school, but he never treats these jerks the same way they treat him. I wouldn't call him Captain Positive or anything, but he's just a good-natured kid and, honestly, best friend goals. And he's just so likable. He's just a really good friend, and I think he's the kind of friend that Cody needs but doesn't deserve, if that makes any sense. Now back to our show. We're at the point now where Cody's weird abilities are slowly developing. So during the birthday party, he tries to kiss Sam and he shocks her. Step one. There's some electric eel biology in there that Jess talks about later. Who is it in H2O that does the electric stuff? Is it Ricky? It's Ricky, right? Okay, yeah, it's Ricky. There's like the heating and cooling stuff that she does, I think. And you know, we never meet Cody's biological father, so I'm gonna go ahead and assume Cody's bio dad is a failed Palpatine clone. We were that I guess that came up recently with there was like a Star Wars script with a failed Palpatine clone, so maybe that's Cody's bio dad. I don't know. He has stuff sticking to his hands, which might be a byproduct of the scales on his hands that are coming up in a minute. And there's some biology there that I'm missing. And that eventually leads to Cody being able to scale the walls Spider-Man style. So Jess is Peter Parker, but Cody is Spider-Man. Interesting. At some point, he talks to fish and has them do flips, so he's Aquaman too. Basically, if you throw Ricky Chadwick, Spider-Man, Aquaman, Emperor Palpatine into a stew with a dash of Michael Phelps, you come up with Cody Griffin. This movie was written by nerds. Absolute nerds. You know, when he starts scaling the walls, I wrote down in my notes, wow, Spider-Man 3 looks great. Which I want to say they're supposed to start filming Spider-Man 3 in the summer, and technically he has an adopted mermaid cousin, so Kevin Feige, if you're listening, there's my pitch. By the way, Google Linda Brown Marvel, you'll thank me later. There's a lot to learn there. That might be another episode in and of itself, like the connection between mermaids and the superhero realm. Obviously not today, but I've spent a lot of time talking about Spider-Man already. Oh, and there's this other little Cody quirk going on here, and that this boy is thirsty. And I don't mean like in that hormonal teenager way. I just mean like he's constantly drinking water. Even the sight of running water makes this kid's blood run. Enough to make one worry about his health, like that's a cause for concern in most humans. I'm gonna go ahead and point out that anti-capitalist queen Sharon Griffin, his mother, adoptive mother, also has some phobia of doctors, and in 2020 might have turned out to be an anti-vaxxer. We don't know. So basically her idea is to not send Cody to a doctor, which sure, I guess. Sure. Anyway, let's check back in with Cody and Jess and see where they're going. They've kind of brokered this deal where Jess basically does all the dirty work for the project, where Cody teaches him how to swim. Jess is really good at marine biology. Cody's really good at swimming. It all works out. That's playing up each other's strengths, you guys. They go to shake hands and boom, there's scales on Cody's hand. And this is where I'm going to talk a little bit about the makeup effects in this movie. Honestly, for what it was, this was like Disney Channel 1999. They're not bad. They're really not bad. I mean, we could probably do better stuff now, but for what it was at the time, honestly, I'm watching it now and I'm like, you know what? Those still look pretty cool. And he gets fins on his arms later that also look really cool. Again, just the effects in this movie are really not that bad. The acting is sure, but again, there's a lot of really, really good things about this movie, again, for what it was at the time. So, remember at the top of the show, I said something about Kristen Stewart, and I told you she'd be important later because here she is, waiting in the middle of a hilariously long water fountain line, a teeny tiny 9-year-old Kristen Stewart among so many students waiting ever so patiently for Cody to get done at this water fountain. Now, why is Kristen Stewart there? Was she just randomly cast? Great question. Not so random. Kristen's mother, Jules Stewart, was a script supervisor on this movie. Another thing I didn't know until I started researching it. So that's pretty cool. I think this was the first thing that Kristen was ever in. How long was this before Twilight? Twilight was like 2009, 2008. So nearly a decade into her career, she got Twilight. And this was where she started. So anything is possible, you guys. There are no small actors. No, there are no small parts. Only small actors. I'm small. I'm like 5'2". True story. So let's fast forward a bit. We're going to fast forward. Anti-capitalist queen Sharon Griffin has relented and allowed a doctor to finally meet with Cody and see what's up with him. Naturally, he hmms a lot, as any doctor in a movie does, and she hates it. And I would too. That's really annoying. Doctor sends the parents out, talks to Cody in private, and pins Cody's issues to puberty? Yeah, he's not having that. So, here's one mermaid connection we can make. This is something that Cody brings up somewhere, and it's that whenever he touches water, he starts developing these little mermaid traits, the scales, the fins, and what have you. Now, when I try to Google mermaid when wet, I end up with a bunch of Wattpad spells that, spoiler alert, don't work. But there's a connection to be made to the mythology of the Selkie. Selkies take the form of a seal rather than a fish, and a fully formed seal at that. no half human, half seal thing. It's a whole seal. The twist with the seal is that it can shed its skin and eventually become a human and walk on land until it goes back to the sea when it becomes a seal again. There are a few instances that can keep the Selkie from turning back into a seal, such as when the seal skin is stolen. So that's one connection you can make to a wet mermaid, dry human concept. Splash from 1984 is one of the earliest cinematic examples of this common trope, but they've appeared in folklore centuries prior. I just couldn't find like a specific example. This has also been famously part of the H2O canon, as the main mermaids of the show possess human forms on land and become mermaids at just the teeniest, tiniest drop of water. Hence, sometimes they drink water out of straws just so it doesn't come in contact with their skin. This movie takes that trope in a different direction, as Cody's mer traits manifest when he comes in contact with water, but the transformation is incomplete until a certain point. Literally, I looked everywhere for some pre-splash mythological examples of this trope, and honestly, the Selkie, I think, is the closest thing. If you have something to add to this, get at me on social media. I have everything linked in the show notes, please. I want answers. I was looking everywhere. I couldn't find a single specific example of this. It just wasn't coming. So if you have it, I'd like to see it. Let's move on. Jess is doing his best to get to the bottom of Cody's weird condition because this doctor is not helpful at all. And Jess, the tiny Jacques Cousteau that he is, I firmly believe that he grew up to be like a Jacques Cousteau type. He is just the guy to get the answers that Cody craves, even if it means venturing into Big John's mermaid chamber and doing some digging. As his father presses him about taking a sudden interest in mermaids, he finds something interesting in one of Big John's books. It's kind of a similar case as with the Selkies, where the mermaid can take a human form and walk among humans up until they reach the age of 13, when their mer traits began to manifest, leading up to their complete transformation. Let's get into some symbology for a minute here, because this is one of the big components of this show, and I did not get into it with Aquamarine, so now I'm going to actually do it. Sorry if you were looking for it with Aquamarine. I can't find any mythological examples of a human taking a mer form going into their teenage years, but the mermaid is a common symbol of transition. Perhaps this is due in part to the mermaid being half human, half fish, and kind of being between worlds. There's a fairly well-known transgender charity based in the UK called Mermaids that in itself illustrating the relationship between merfolk and the transgender community. The mermaid's shape-shifting ability kind of lends itself to this, which can kind of apply to the puberty metaphor as well, even when taken out of the transgender context. Especially when you put it in the context of The Little Mermaid, in this case, probably best applied to the Disney interpretation, in my opinion, in which Ariel longs to walk amongst humans even before meeting Prince Eric, kind of feeling like she's in the wrong body, in a way. With the story of The Little Mermaid so intrinsically tied to mermaid lore, being the most famous mermaid story of all time, it's no secret that the mermaid has become so closely affiliated with the transgender community specifically. I would say the similar principle can be applied to one's teenage years, my bad. Things change pretty drastically in that time. You know, you go to middle school, you go to high school, you meet new friends, lose old ones, and more importantly, your body goes through a multitude of changes. The mermaid symbology as a metaphor for transformation and transition makes it a natural fit for Cody, even taken out of the context of this transgender symbology. This concept is also explored in two films from 2017, Scales, Mermaids Are Real, and Blew My Mind. Those films I'll be getting into very soon because I do want to connect them back to the 13th year. In those movies, the main heroines start transitioning into mermaids during their formative teenage years as a metaphorical example of transition. Obviously not limited to mermaids, of course, as werewolves are also a common example, such as the 1985 film Teen Wolf and the 2011 MTV drama series of the same name, loosely based on it. So here's my take. This is my take. Those teenage years can be stressful and honestly can feel like an out-of-body experience for some. It's a transformation in and of itself, and sometimes you feel so out of touch with your own body that you don't even feel human anymore. So I think that makes the metaphor all the more fitting. It just, you don't quite feel like yourself as this is going on. We've all been through it. And so the transition into something that isn't human is, I think, a really clever way to illustrate it, whether it's a mermaid or a werewolf or whatever. So, you know, who can relate? Also, when I was young, I was convinced because of this movie that I was going to become a mermaid when I was 13, so I didn't apply myself in any of my schoolwork my first year of middle school because I didn't think I was going to be human for very long. It's almost hilarious, except it would be funny if it weren't true. It's actually kind of upsetting. I was so naive, And for some reason, I didn't want to make the disconnect between fantasy and reality. So there, right there, is my deep, dark secret, y'all. I was 13 at the time. Anyway, that was a lot. So now we're going to go back to the classroom where Jess decides to share his findings with Cody, kind of drop this clamshell on him, if you will. Cody's got a clamshell to drop of his own, and he reveals to Jess that he's adopted. This was obviously established early on, and earlier in the movie, Cody mentions it, so it's not exactly news, but with Jess's findings, that kind of puts it in a whole new context and totally and completely blows Cody's mind. By the way, how does Jess not, like, have a microscope, in his own room? I have a microphone in my room. I'm using it. So how does he not have a microscope in his own room? You think he would, but here they are in the classroom. Thankfully, nobody's there, but man, you gotta feel some kind of way telling your friend in a very public space, that he's a merman. That's gotta be humbling, to say the least. And while I'm at it, why did it take this long for Cody to tell Jess that he was adopted? I mean, I guess maybe they weren't close enough up until this point for Cody to share that, I guess, but I guess that's the best explanation, but geez. And so a few amusing things happen here in the classroom. Cody says, I don't remember Ariel having this little ability, as he demonstrates his electrokinesis to Jess, because as we know, Ariel is synonymous with merc culture on the whole. And number two, they keep correcting mermaid to merman, which is going to be a running gag here. This happens a lot throughout the movie, because I guess the concept of a merman is so unheard of. No, it's not, but I don't know. Maybe it's just funnier that they casually refer to him as a mermaid. And that in itself has a lot to do with, I guess, how the mermaid is more prominent in culture than the merman. In fact, I want to say, like, there's not a whole lot of merman movies. I can think of maybe one other merman movie off the top of my head other than this one. And that is Sabrina Down Under, with the Sabrina the Teenage Witch movie. I think it was from like the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, where Sabrina goes to Australia and there is a merman. And it's cool. I'm going to cover that one at some point, maybe. but they're not as common. And so I think because of that, this movie is really special to a lot of merman performers. People in the mermaid community who identify as male. Because this was like the one of very few mermen represented in any kind of movie, really. And so that makes it very special to them. Of course, I do not identify as male, but it was still very special to me for different reasons. So Cody's only going to get scalier as this film goes on. Going back to the thing about the makeup effects, again, they're really, really good. And I guess that's a way of illustrating how much further along transformation is going. He gets more scales, eventually develops like the arm fins. And he has to hide these from Sam when she comes by the beach to see him. And there's some trouble in paradise now because Cody's not telling her a lot. She feels kind of betrayed. She feels kind of shut out compared to Jess. But obviously Jess is kind of helping him figure this stuff out. And that includes right now at the swim finals. I think it was finals. It was something swim competition. I lost count. My brain went to Glee for some reason. So the star player of the Mahone Bay Marlins, what team? Marlins, is nowhere to be found. And not even Sam knows where he is because he doesn't tell me much these days. Again, showing up late to his own swim meet, but as far as his parents are concerned, he's in bed, asleep, definitely not going to the swim meet out of fear of his secret getting out. Oh, by the way, at this point, they're pretty aware of it because they've had that little talk. Naturally, Cody slays the meet, pumps his fists, fins all out for everyone to see. Including his rival, whose name I honestly forgot, and Big John Wheatley, the creep with binoculars. He's watching teenage boys at a swim meet with binoculars. Okay, listen, I know why he's doing this. I know he suspects Cody might be a merman based on the talk he had with Jess earlier, but just the whole idea of it creeps me out, okay? It creeps me out. Big John is a grown man watching a young boy swimming, and not because he's his son or anything. How did that fly under people's radars in 1999? Like, watching this in 2020, my skin was just crawling. And I'm not trying to insinuate anything, but it was just the whole visual of it. I was like, yeah. Like, it'd be one thing if he was there to watch Cody to support his son's friend. cool, but the way he watches him specifically is just so weird. Like, Sweet Holy Neptune, that creeps me out. We're going to go ahead and reiterate now that Jess, because we're going to go back to Jess now. Jess is a real one. Sam isn't. I'm sorry. Sam kind of ditches Cody for a minute because this whole merman thing is too wild for her. Can't deal with it. So she can't be her. She can't be there for her boyfriend when he needs it the most. He goes out of his way. He says, I really need you right now. And she's just like, can't deal. So she won't be there for him because this is just too much for her to handle. And on one hand, I'm like, self-care. But on the other, I'm like, girl, he needs you. He needs you so much right now. His words, not mine. Jess, on the other hand, sticks around this whole ordeal and at this point is the only friend Cody seems to have. Because now Cody's got his own rumor spreading throughout the whole school claiming he's been cheating at these swim meets. So he's not severely well-liked right now. There is a really nice exchange here where Cody essentially thanks Jess for sticking by him even as Jess questions his standing with Cody. Like, Cody's like, I've been such a jerk to you. Why do you stick around? And Cody's like, Jess is like, I don't know. Why do I? And then Cody says, because you're just a good guy and you're good natured. And then that results in the cutest exchange ever. They like, this is adorable. They like play tackle each other and Jess is yelling like, merman attack. And it's so cute. It reminds me of the scene in The Lion King where Simba and Mufasa are playing under the stars before Mufasa goes on that whole Kings of the Past monologue. And I could do that whole thing right now, but I'm not going to. But it's very, very cute. That's one really good thing about this movie is the natural character development between Cody and Jess, where they start out kind of awkward until at some point they really are the only ones that are there for each other. Like I said, Jess, real one. I said earlier that Cody doesn't deserve him, but Jess is exactly the person he needs right now. And I think that I also said that too. He's a real one. And I think I'm going long now, so I think I'm going to try to cut it down to the absolute essentials. There's a great quote from Cody somewhere here as he and Sam meet again at the Cove, and he's like, we're in middle school. Someone wears the wrong shorts. People talk. And that also applies when you wear Hot Topic band tees and listen to Linkin Park and watch vampire movies. I'm not speaking from experience. Yes, I am. What I'm saying is that middle schoolers are ruthless. I think there's a whole John Mulaney joke about this, where he says, like, they'll make fun of you, but in an accurate way. And he's right, mostly. So now things are getting real because Cody suddenly can't walk. Not just because he's in extreme pain, but also because his feet are literal fins. They're just big old fins. Like, he's not in tail mode yet, but he's just got these big, thin feet. Holy Neptune. He's turning into a Starbucks siren. Oh, Chess Starbuck. Go figure. His last name is Starbuck, and he's turning into a Starbucks fish. Okay, he's probably heard that like a billion times before, and I feel bad about it. I feel like that wasn't original, and I feel like he gets that all the time. So my apologies in advance, Chess Starbuck. You're doing great. So he's captured in his state, no surprise, by guess who? JJ from Parks and Rec, MAGA hat fisherman guy, Big John Wheatley. But he's, you know, Big John's playing it off like he's genuinely trying to help Cody, and on the surface comes off as genuine. But given the context, he's hard to trust, considering he was very clearly eyeballing Cody at the swim meet the whole time with binoculars. Again, probably because he got the idea from Jess that he could be a merman. But again, it's weird. It's just weird. And also, I'm going to tip my hat to Brent Briscoe here for really selling being kind of creepy and snaky, but also coming across as genuine, like he's genuinely trying to help Cody. So get this guy an Emmy, man. So Mermama finally gets trapped. There we go. Jess jumps in to save her, and he actually succeeds because Jess is the MVP of this entire movie. But then Jess gets dragged back underwater by the net, like he's got something caught onto his foot or something, onto his shoe, and as the net's falling back down, it takes Jess with it. And he nearly drowns. So Cody manages to get out of the boat that he's on to save him, shocks him back to life. Don't try that at home. Mermama returns and has this deep heart-to-heart telepathic conversation with anti-capitalist mom Sharon over Cody, to where Sharon ultimately relents and gives her son back. Sharon. It's the least you can do. He's not your son. you have to think about that. There was this whole thing in the beginning where like Dave Coulier was going on about how this is not just a dollar bill you find on the ground. This is a baby, which means it's someone's baby. It means it's not yours. So suddenly, now that you've had him for like 13 years, you claim some kind of ownership over him when here's the thing. Cody is shifting into something that really is not viable on land. So you really can't be selfish with him. I think he's supposed to be back in the water, is what I'm saying. And to keep him on land because you're selfish, and as far as you're concerned, he's your son, it's a bit selfish. He does need to go back with Mermama. So yeah, Sharon was kind of in the wrong there. Again, I assume it's telepathic. No words are exchanged at all, but because of the long shots between Sharon and Mermama Carey, that's the impression that I'm getting. So there's somewhere in this discussion, I guess it comes across, because Sharon mentions this, that Cody will be back before the fall semester or something. And so there's some interesting mermaid logistics right there. But by that logic, wouldn't Mermama not be able to walk on land for a while herself? Maybe she could go have brunch with Sharon like white suburban mom types do. I don't know. Anyway, Cody returns to the sea with his Mermama, finally gets his tail, and we never see him again. There was no sequel to this movie. There was no further continuity to it. That was just kind of it. Jess kind of laments that his only friend ever turned into a fish and left him. But like I said, he'll be back at some point. Somehow, somewhere. And there it is. So, overall verdict of the 13th year. The overarching theme of the movie seems to be one about transition, which also kind of makes sense with Aquamarine, as we talked about that one last time, where Claire and Haley were transitioning into new lives, with one of them moving away. In this case, Cody is transitioning into his teenage years, and by that ticket, to a new life of his own with his birth mother under the sea. This is something the 13th year tackles with its signature Disney Channel humor and quirkiness. Some aspects of this film really did not age well, but I will say that the effects and makeup are some of the best of Disney Channel for the time. Acting, it's better than I'd expect. But again, for a Disney Channel movie, it's not bad. I'm going to give this movie like 3.5 starfish. Like I said, it was a big part of my childhood. It's still special to me now. I'm probably a little bit biased, but I really do not think it's that bad. I still enjoy watching it. By the way, there's like an ending credit song to this movie. It's so bad. If you do get around to watching it, watch to the end just to listen to that awful end credit song. It is so like, how do I describe it? It's so like Harvey Danger Flagpole Sitta to me. Not really even that, but it feels like it's that era. Like the late 90s, early 2000s, like alt rock thing. It's like, it really is like a product of its time. So speaking of watching the 13th year, where can you watch the 13th year? I watched it on Disney Plus, and it's free with your Disney Plus subscription. If you are not subscribed to Disney Plus, or maybe it's not available, well, if it's not available in your area, you can get it on like iTunes, Google Play, or YouTube. If Disney Plus is available in your area and you don't have a subscription, I believe there's a 7-day free trial. And after that, it's like $7 a month, I think. And I want to say if you cancel it before the end of the trial, you're not charged, but don't take my word for it. Do your own research. I don't remember if it ever got a DVD release, so finding it at your library might be difficult. It did have a VHS release, but even that is super difficult to come across. Trust me, I've looked on like eBay, Mercari, what have you, and it's tough. So those would be my recommendations. Again, Disney Plus, Google Play, iTunes, YouTube, Amazon Video. Amazon Prime Video also has it, so check that as well. Give it a watch. Enjoy it. Let me know what you thought of it. I want to start a conversation about this movie. Let's talk mermen and things. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of the 13th year. Please be sure to stay tuned to all my socials to find out what our next selection will be. I'm Mermaidsandria on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Be sure to message me with all your thoughts, and don't forget to leave a voice message if you're using the Anchor app. Be sure to subscribe on the streaming app of your choice and tell all your mer friends about the show. In the meantime, this has been Mermaidsandria. Have a mermaizing day and a fantastic tomorrow.